So, as is very normal with me, three unkosher coincidences that happened in a week. The first one, of course, was today's Torah portion, where we have Pharaoh and God hardening his heart. Then Rabbi Sacks wrote about the same thing. And then this Presbyterian up in Idaho that I follow, Doug Wilson, wrote about the same thing. So I figured that's probably what I'm supposed to talk about. So let's start with Sacks. The title of his article, and it's on ICE, you can read it, is Free Will, Use It or Lose It, which I kind of like. That's why I read the thing, because the title was catchy. He says that the rabbis have three explanations for what's going on. The first one is that he acted freely during the first five plagues, and therefore plagues 6 through 10 were just punishment. So he had a chance in the first five plagues to change his mind, but once he didn't, then after that, God punished him. The second one is the word chazak, which is used at the beginning, means to strengthen, not to harden. In other words, rather than hardening his heart, he just strengthened his heart, and God helped him along there. And then the last one is, he was free throughout all 10 plagues, but only in the last five was his behavior so bizarre that anybody takes note. So Rabbi Sacks, and I'm going to quote him, "Note how reluctant the commentators are to take the text at face value. Rightly so, because free will is one of the fundamental beliefs of Judaism. Maimonides explains why. If we had no free will, there would be, he says, no point in the commands and prohibitions, since we would behave as we are predestined to, regardless of what the law is, nor would there be any justice in reward or punishment, since neither the righteous nor the wrongdoer is free to be other than what they are." The point is that according to rabbinic Judaism, the idea of free will is fundamental. And Sacks goes on, says there's lots of challenges to free will. Yet, at some level, all of us feel that this isn't right. So when you have all these explanations of why free will doesn't exist, it makes pretty much everybody kind of uncomfortable. So what we're going to talk about is why that works and why you do have free will. So one of the challenges is scientific determinism. And that's just that our thoughts are a product of electrochemical processes which respond to physical causes. Very complex, but not free. In other words, it's all just chemistry and electronics, and you think you're free because everything is so very complicated, but you're really not. Now, the problem with that is that it assumes a closed system. What does that mean? It's the same problem that much of environmentalism has. We're running out of this, we're running out of that, we're running out of oil, we're running out of whatever. All of those assume a closed system. If everything inside a bottle stays inside a bottle, the bottle is sealed, and you use it up and you can't get any more in, then yeah, you're using stuff up. The Earth is not a sealed system. The Earth receives energy from the sun, and the Earth receives material to the tune of millions of tons from dust and stuff as we sweep through the air. So the Earth is not a sealed system. Nor is the universe, because you have God outside of the universe who influences creation. So the idea of everything is just physical processes doesn't work, because it assumes a sealed system, which we are not. Neither is the Earth sealed, nor is the universe sealed. Darwinism, another challenge to free will. And it says, "We are the result of successful genes that limit our choices to what our ancestors did to survive." So your ancestors did stuff to survive, and they survived, and their genes propagated. So the stuff you can do is limited. And to some extent, that's true. For example, without the aid of machines, I can't fly. So there's some truth in that, and it's plausible, but it's not correct. Calvinism. This is where Doug Wilson comes in, because he's a Calvinist. I've often said Calvinists are not stupid people. They are some of the brightest people in the world, and they care very much. I am not looking at this as, how can you be so stupid? I am saying, you're simply wrong. So Calvinism, we are only free to act according to our nature. We all have a nature that we grew up with and so forth. So your choices are limited according to your nature. And you can see that that's also partially true. Because you do something and your experience, your upbringing and so forth, some choices just don't ever occur to you. Your nature is such that you do or don't do certain things and just doesn't occur to you. I'll give you a trivial example. Once I started doing this, I no longer had any desire to eat pork or shellfish. Don't miss them. When I go to a buffet or something like that, it just isn't in my nature to eat that stuff anymore. So I don't have to make a choice. I don't even think about it. Because my nature is now such that it isn't one of my options. So what Calvinism says is our nature is sinful. And because our nature is sinful, we cannot freely choose God. And there's an acronym for it. Those of you who have been around for a while have heard it lots of times. The acronym is TULIP, which is total depravity. Our nature is sinful and fallen, and there's nothing we can do about that. That's just who we are. And then unconditional election, which is to say God decides who he's going to save, and those he saves can't do anything about it, nor can those he doesn't save. Just his decision. Don't know why he decides, but he gets to decide, and that's it. Limited atonement, which is to say he doesn't choose everybody. So there's some people that are just born to be crispy critters to go to hell. He didn't choose them, so that's the way it is. Tough being you if you weren't chosen. Irresistible grace, which is to say once he makes those he wants an offer, they cannot refuse. Remember, they don't believe in complete free will. And then finally, perseverance of the saints, which means if he brings you in, you're in. You didn't have any choice getting in, and you don't have any choice getting out. So that's in a nutshell. Now, Wilson, who's a very bright guy, wrote on his blog, just by coincidence, which is not a kosher word, for some reason, no one wants to admit that the grace of the new birth is irresistible. In other words, nobody wants to admit that God makes some people an offer they can't refuse. But our first birth are just as irresistible. And virtually no one complains about that. I was born in 1953. I do not recall ever being consulted in 1952 about whether I wanted to be born or not. Life was simply thrust on me, somewhat violently, they tell me. And the first thing I knew, I was playing with toy trucks on the floor of this family's living room. The name was Wilson, they said, and the prison door clanged shut. The whole business is irresistible. It makes your skin crawl to think about it. I was now somebody's brother, not somebody's sister. I hadn't been asked about my preferences there. I was an American, not an Englishman. I was a Wilson, not a Williams or a Smith. In short, there was a good bit of tyranny all around. That is the best defense of irresistible grace I have ever heard. It's really good. I don't agree with it, but it's really good. So, as I say, these are not stupid people. So, modern secularists believe that we should be able to do whatever we wish to do, so long as it doesn't harm others. That was the mantra for years. Well, sadly, that leads to death. Always. So what we see is rampant abortion. We see rampant sexual deviancy. We see rampant drug use. All of those things are choices that people have made that don't harm anybody. And what it really means is choices that you make that don't harm me. I'm free to harm other people, but don't harm me. So the idea there is radical free will, but then the secularists also say we don't actually have free will. So it's entirely schizophrenic. So now let's get to Rabbi Sacks, who disagrees with all this, as do I, by the way. And what he says is the whole purpose of the Torah that was given to us at Sinai is so that we have tools and rituals and information that allow us to work on our nature. Remember, back in Calvinism, we said By nature, we're sinful. Therefore, it is not possible for us to choose God because it's against our nature. That's Calvinism in a nutshell. What Sachs says, with which I agree, is God has given us information and tools that allow us to change our nature. That's the whole point of the exercise. You are given information and you are able then to use that information and become someone of a different nature than you were born. And he has a quote that I kind of like. If so, then today's parsha and contemporary science tell the same story, that freedom is not given, nor is it an absolute. We have to work for it. We acquire it slowly in stages, and we can lose it, as Pharaoh lost his, as drug addicts, workaholics, and people addicted to computer games lose theirs. In one of the most famous opening lines in all literature, Jean-Jacques Rousseau wrote, "At the beginning of The Social Contract," that's the name of the book, "that man is born free and everywhere he is in chains." In fact, the opposite is true. Our early character is determined partially by DNA, the genetic heritage of our parents and theirs, partially by our home and upbringing, partially by our friends, and partially by the surrounding culture. We are not born free. We have to work hard to achieve freedom. Notice entirely different perspectives. And we go through Musar periodically. And the whole point of the Musar program is to give you tools to work on your character so that you can achieve the freedom that God wants you to have. That's the whole point of the exercise there. And of course, you all know that Torah doesn't mean law. It means teaching. It means instruction. So what God does is he comes to us first at Sinai, and then as Yeshua, and then as the Holy Spirit, in all cases to give us tools that allow us to alter our character so that we can choose to be free. Freedom is what he wants for us. And as both Doug Wilson and Rabbi Sachs say, you aren't born free. That's something you got to work to get. And one of the things that God has given us is the tools. Now, what about people who have the benefit of growing up in a Christian household or a Jewish household or a household that understands this? Well, there's an answer to that too. Ecclesiastes 3:10. I have seen the business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. He has made everything beautiful in his time. Also, he has put eternity into man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. Virtually every civilization has got ways that allow people to progress from being two-year-old little savages on the rug, which is how we all start, into something better. The Eastern religions, with their meditation and discipline and so forth, Christianity and Judaism, with our teaching in Torah, every culture has something where they recognize there's something more. There's something more than this nature that we were born with. And not all of them recognize the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, but they all have this urge to get out of the animal nature that they were built with and somehow get into some kind of a spiritual nature. They don't always go in the right door, but they have the same urge. That's what God has built into all of us. So, what you want to do, and most of you are working on this, and I'm preaching to the choir, thank God, is you want to develop an internal sense of who you are. You know, who am I? Does the thing that I want to do match my image? Remember, I was using my little trivial example of bacon on a buffet table. As I say, I'm no longer even tempted. But initially it was, oh, there's bacon there. And I used to love bacon. I would go to a buffet and I would load up on the bacon because I really liked it. Perfect combination of fat and grease. I mean, what's not to like about bacon other than God says you can't eat it? So at first, it's a question of who am I and is that bacon something that I can eat? And early on, there was a decision that I had to make. Now the decision is no longer there. Now the Musar rabbis have a saying, the thing that you do three times is no longer a sin. What that means is, the first time you do something you're not supposed to do, there's a struggle. Like my little example with the bacon. Do I eat the bacon or not? That's the first time. And when I don't do that, I build my character. If you do that, if I eat the bacon just this one more time, it'll be okay. Just one more time, I'm going to have the bacon. And then a couple weeks later, it happens again. And it happens the third time. After I have eaten the bacon the third time, it is no longer an internal struggle. Eating bacon in defiance of God is not part of me. I don't think about it. I don't struggle about it. It isn't a problem. I have rationalized to the point where bacon is now okay for me. That's what the rabbis mean. The thing that you do three times is no longer a sin for you because you have changed your nature in that area, whatever that area is. So let's look at Pharaoh. Pharaoh's nature is that he is the king of the most powerful local nation in the world. He has been told he's a god. People look up to him, they worship him, they fear him, and these two raggedy Hebrews wander into his palace and say, hey, we're going to leave, 3-day weekend, worship our god. Who are you to tell me what to do? Pharaoh's nature is that he is powerful. So when God says at the beginning, when Moses is at the bush, and he says, all right, you go to Pharaoh, but I'll tell you, he won't let him go. What God knows is Pharaoh's nature. Pharaoh is incapable of making decisions against his own nature. Now, when Moses shows up and says, our God has appeared to us and we need a 3-day weekend to go worship him, pretty much everybody in the surrounding area recognizes that is not an unreasonable request. Oh, you've got a God. I've got God. Okay, cool. Your God came and talked to you and he wants you. Well, okay, that's not unreasonable. Hike on across the river there and worship him for 3 days and come back and get to work. That is a request that at a reasonable level, Pharaoh should be able to grant. But God knows that his nature is nobody does anything in Egypt unless I let them. And it didn't occur to me to let you guys go take a 3-day weekend, so we're not going to do it. Remember, we got the bricks without straw incident and all that kind of stuff. So it is not the case that God at the beginning has decided that he is going to make Pharaoh obdurate. That's a good translation. I like that one that you were reading. No, he knows Pharaoh's nature. Pharaoh's not going to let him go. And it's only when we get to the 7th plague that Pharaoh finally buckles. The hail with the fire and all that kind of stuff, something he's never seen before. He says, whoa, I have sinned. And after that, God's got some more stuff to do. And so God, after that, does in fact harden his heart. But up until that point, Pharaoh is simply, I'm Pharaoh. And my gods have been able to do most of the stuff your gods can do, so there's no way. And furthermore, you're not going to make me, because I'm the king. If you'd come in and ask me pretty please, I might have given you a weekend. But, you know, the way it's going now, never. And by the way, one of the things we'll see next time is Pharaoh tries to negotiate. Well, maybe just the guys. Or, well, don't take your flocks and your herds. Or, well, maybe this. Pharaoh is sort of saying, come on, give me a little room here. Moses and God said, no, we're going to do it our way, period. And so what they do is they tell Pharaoh in front of his whole court, we don't care what you think. And Pharaoh's not going to buy that. So he is obdurate. So, as I was saying, freedom is a thing that needs to be exercised. And you need to develop it. You're not born with it. I'm going to close with some quotes from Romans. I'm in Romans 1:20. His invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made. So they are without excuse. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking and their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. So what Paul is saying in Romans is, regardless of whether anybody ever came and preached the gospel to you, all you have to do is look at the creation and recognize that there is a creation and there is a creator. That's the same thing as the Ecclesiastic passage that I read, where God has put eternity into your heart, everybody's heart. Now, different societies recognize there are gods. They got the wrong one, and you know that causes other problems. But the idea that there are gods and we have responsibilities for our behavior is pretty much universal throughout humanity. And one of the things that God does, starting in verse 24, therefore, God gave them up. Those should be the most chilling words that you should ever hear in your life. God gave them up, which is to say, he took his hand off of them and he let them do whatever they wanted. And by the way, we see this several times in this passage in Romans. Verse 24, that God gave them up in the lust of their hearts to impurity, to the dishonoring of their bodies among themselves. 26, for this reason God gave them up to dishonorable passions, for their women exchanged the natural relations for those that are contrary to nature, and the men likewise gave up natural relations with women and were consumed with passion for one another. Does that sound familiar to anybody? Verse 28. And since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them up to a debased mind. So what Paul is saying here is the same thing Rabbi Sacks is saying, is the same thing I'm saying, not with nearly the same authority, but the whole point is, freedom is something you have to work hard to get. You can lose it, or you can be granted total freedom, which is what you don't want. That's when God gives you up and the Spirit no longer speaks to you. You're off in the wind somewhere. So God is very big on human freedom. That was the whole point of the Exodus exercise. And by the way, the physical slavery that they're in is simply a metaphor for the spiritual slavery that they were also in. And so he takes them to the mountain and he gives them teaching. And he says, this is how you become free, physically free, as well as spiritually free. Because that's what God wants for us. As I'm very fond of saying, God doesn't want puppets. He wants people to love him because they freely choose to do so, and because they recognize that he is lovable. Nobody's born that way. You got to work to get it. Or as Rabbi Sacks says, freedom is a muscle that needs to be exercised. Use it or lose it.